Looking to get quality insurance at a price you can afford? Now you can, thanks to CFM Insurance. Find an agent right in your local area, as CFM is represented by a network of 200 independent agencies throughout Missouri. Select from our broad range of farm, home, and rental property coverage. For personal and dependable service from a company with a history of insuring the families of Missouri that dates back to 1869, visit weinsuremissouri.com and find an agent near you today.
Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.
Welcome to Show Me Missouri. We do the history of Missouri, one county at a time. We are very excited to be here at Smith's Restaurant in Bolivar, Missouri, in Polk County, to discuss Polk County, the county that's home to our current governor, Mike Parson. Very glad to be joined here by the Farm Bureau County President of Polk County, Trent Drake. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And Debbie McGinnis, the Collector of Revenue at Polk County. Welcome to Show Me Missouri.
Thank you, Scott.
We're excited this week to give folks a look into Polk County. 4,906 acres became a county January 5th, 1835, separated off from Greene County, but there's still a lot of ties, right, between Greene County and Polk County today. When folks go to a different restaurant or something, I guess Greene County would be the easiest place to shoot to, correct, down in Springfield?
Yeah.
And for variety, especially.
So if you're going to go to St. Louis, do you go down 44 or do you go over? How do you go from Bolivar?
I-44 would be the best. Over to Lebanon and then...
You go over Lebanon. If you go to Kansas City, you just go straight up north, I guess?
Yep. Straight up 13 to...
71.
Yep.
13 to 71. They actually drew the boundaries of it in March 20th, 1835, and they ended up cutting a few other counties out of it. But when they did it, they ended up being Polk County, Bolivar's, kind of on the same latitude as Richmond, Virginia. Kind of interesting thing you never think about. But I guess I would have thought of Virginia's a little further north. But it's if you draw the crow flies, I guess they'd say, you'd be right about there. So tell us a little bit about how you came to live, Ms. McGinnis, in Polk County.
Well, my grandparents, and we're talking quite a few greats back, came here in 1848. And we've just pretty much stayed here all that time. They were farmers, and when you farm, you don't move and take it with you. You just stay and work it. And so most of the family that I still have around here are engaged in farming, or at least their grandparents might be.
Interesting. So how many... So that generations takes you back to just before the county, just before they started selling the land here from the government, right?
Well, the county had been formed, so it would have been 13 years after that. And so there was quite a bit of huge parcels of land that were in Polk, the town of Polk in Polk County, and that's where our family was.
Mr. Drake, how'd your family get here?
Well, best I can remember, from the stories I remember, most of my family came from Indiana. After the Civil War, and I really remember everybody talking about my great-grandparents, and they actually farmed just out west of town, actually out south of town, and they sold a farm and moved out west of town where we are now. And my grandpa was raised there, and he continued to farm the land, And then my dad farmed, and now I'm farming it, so.
Isn't that an interesting story to be able to tell and pass down, you know?
Oh, yeah.
We want to always, when we get started here, I want to thank our sponsors, Farm Bureau. I want to thank the Missouri Association of Electric Cooperatives. I want to thank the Missouri Association of Counties for letting us be here today and talk about Polk County. Interesting part about Polk County, you'd assume it's named after President Polk. But it ain't named after President, it's named after his granddaddy. Ezekiel Polk was a colonel in the military and actually the grandfather of what would be President Polk. But it's a little bit with the names here, Bolivar in the city and Polk County, you think you know the story just by hearing them, but you don't really know the full story. Am I wrong to say that folks in later life always think it's the president, but it's really the colonel, right? His grandfather.
Right. Because... we're familiar with the name James Polk, but he wasn't elected until after the county was already named.
Yeah.
So we know that that can't be. It's just where you naturally want to go to is to someone that you know is familiar, which we didn't know Ezekiel. But he had grandsons that were Campbells, and that family is still here. It's still in the county.
Does it take you back, though, to how the folks got here? It's always interesting to see the migration of people kind of coming to that Cumberland Pass. I saw some Kentucky families move, some Tennessee families move, and that's kind of how even that you hear Bolivar, and you, of course, think of Simone Bolivar. I'm sure that's not. Now, I'm glad you're here, the seventh generation. How do you actually say Simone Bolivar?
Well, if correctly. I were to say the man's name,
yes.
I think that the Bolivians and the Venezuelans would call him Simón Bolívar.
Now, see, that sounds a lot better than I say it, but I'm used to saying Bolivar. So,
well, we're in the Ozarks, so we're going to say it how we want to say it. We have unique pronunciations.
So as folks come through here, Tennessee and Kentucky, they found the, it looks like first settled back to the Osage and the Delaware Indians. You could really, before they were agrarian, but there's a lot of land you could graze cattle and horses on, right? I guess that's still, you raise a lot of cattle here today, right?
Yes.
We're here at Smith's Restaurant, and I see when I come in there, member of the Cattlemen Association right there, mm-hmm. posted on the mirror. Ezekiel Polk was obvious, the word is he was a little bit harsher of a guy than his grandson, but he was quite accomplished at taking over and taming native tribes, not just in America, or not just in the United States, but other places. He'd be a person that could conquer a land and hold it, which I guess, you know, we think about things as an easy drive down an interstate or over from Buffalo, but back in the day, you had to, if you took territory, you had to take it from some group and keep it. And a little bit of bloodshed to make sure to settle Bolivar out this far west, which I guess would really be in the edge of the United States when it was being formed. Talk about the county seat. We all call it Bolivar. The story, and I'm going to let you tell it, Ms. McGinnis. I just assumed you see the statue. It was named after, how do you say his name again?
Simón Bolívar.
But now that ain't how folks will say it. They'll say it's named after the town, right, in Tennessee.
Well, we're named after the town of Bolivar, Tennessee, because that's where the Polks and the Campbells came from. Hmm? And ironically, they also had a town within their county that was called Brighton. And we also have a Brighton here that they named in our county. So they brought a lot of their history along with them when they came to Polk County.
All right, so I want to talk about the actual event later on. But they named the town Bolivar, which I guess is how a West Butler County hillbilly would pronounce Simón Bolívar's name.
Right.
But when they put the statue of Simón Bolívar, did the folks in Venezuela not know you were talking about the town in Tennessee?
No, they had approached the president, at that time it was President Truman, and said that they wanted to present a statue in the United States of their liberator. That's what they called him, their liberator. And because we were a Missouri Bolivar, and our president was from Missouri, it really was a no-brainer as to who would get the statue, even though there were 13 other Bolivars in the United States that could have been used. So he brought it home. And he came on that day as the Venezuelan president, Romulo Gallegos, came with him, as well as the mayor of Bolivar, who was Dr. Doyle McGraw. And they had a parade, and they presented the statue. They uncovered it. Then they went to the square, and they had the people march by. And the people who were in the high school then, this is a vivid memory they have.
Sure.
Now, granted, they're getting some age on them now. But that was a big day in Bolivar, because at that time, our population was about 3,500 people. And they estimate that 50,000 people were in town that day. It was July 5th, 1948, and it was a hot day. And they had first aid stations set up because people were fainting, because they had on their hats, they had on their gloves, long sleeve shirts, and wool jackets. And they were there for a very monumentous occasion, and they were dressed for the part. They had marching bands, they had speeches that were made by the presidents of both countries. Ironically, the day before was our Independence Day, but July 5th is the Independence Day in Venezuela.
Wow.
So I think that that's why that day was chosen, because I was thinking, why didn't they do it in the fall? That's what they wanted to do, because Simón Bolívar, he represented democracy, liberty, freedom for the Americas, which we would consider mm-hmm. the South Americas, but he just called them the Americas. And I think that that's ironic, because when we get away from here, sometimes we forget that there's other Americas
yeah.
besides North America.
I love how you pronounce his last name. And also, like, we're lucky if the broadcast sounds better this week, it's because Rachel Dunn is actually here to make it sound decent. And I'm glad you're here to say Missouri, because it's good to get in a truck and get out of Get out of Jefferson City or St. Louis in Kansas City. Rachel's from Kansas City, where people actually say the name of the state right, which is obviously Missouri.
I totally agree, and I've had many, many conversations with people about this. And I tell them that just because you're in the minority does not make you wrong. It's just like having a baby in the house. The minority sometimes rules. But I believe that the name Missouri was the way that the Indians pronounced it when they were here in St. Louis, and it means town of the large canoes. And that's what they saw when they saw the white men coming. The French anglicized the word and put the E sound on it. But I believe that the Native Americans are the ones who actually pronounced it Missouri. My proof of that would be the way that we say Cincinnati, and they say Cincinnati. We say Miami, and they say Miami. And it is Missouri.
That is a very well, we got to clip that. That's a very well articulated thing. Well, Trent, I mean, it's Rachel would be, who doesn't have a microphone, luckily right now for me, is a Missouri person. I'm Missouri, obviously. How do you say the state?
Missouri.
Exactly. See, this is why Show Me Missouri is one of the best programs you can listen to, because we say the name right. So the legislature appropriated some folks to go out and find a county seat, and the town of Bolivar didn't really exist. Joseph Matthews got into selecting it, and then William Jameson actually bought the land, and down in Greene County, apparently, you can actually go see the deed where Jameson bought the land from the federal government. Because the way the story is here, they would sell him some land for the county seat, and then in 1837, the government started selling their government land out so people could come here and buy a plot of government land, which actually made the settlement actually kind of take off. Interesting notes about the county. The first sermon was preached here by W. Slavin, Reverend, in 1832. The first school, Three Mound Prairie. Now, that's a little disputed, but that's kind of how they come to it in the state archives. By B.U. Goodrich, was the headmaster in 1835. Tell me about the schools in Polk County today.
Well, they're consolidated now, for one thing. So I don't know exactly. I'm thinking 1910 was when they started the consolidation, because at that point we had 92 schools. Some of them still continue to remain. I know that my dad went to a one-room schoolhouse in the 40s, and then the high schools consolidated, and that's why you have the R1, R2, because reorganized and all that. And they're alphabetical, in case anybody was wondering about why Bolivar's R1. It's not because we're number one, although I think we are. It stands for the B was before the other five schools that are in the county. I'm looking at a map here. It's an old map, and it actually has Three Mound Prairie on it.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, and then also, it also mentions a town called Lamartinville, and I've never heard of that name in my life, and I've lived here all my life. I don't know what that consisted of, but it basically was between Bolivar and Halfway, where we would call Burns.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever heard of Lamartinville?
No.
So this was
Burns,
an interesting man.
I've just heard it always called Burns.
Yeah, and Burns Bridge.
Yes.
But I had produced this map because I was trying to do a little bit more history on the Butterfield Overland Stage and mail that came through here, and trying to find out where the route was, and came across this map, and it had a name on it that even I didn't recognize, so I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. So how many school districts under the reorganization are there?
Six.
Six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I collect for 11 because there's portions of five that lay in the county, but they're not a part of Polk County. They just cross the border line.
Bolivar being the biggest?
Absolutely.
What else is there?
Fairplay, Humansville, Mooresville, Pleasant Hope, and more. Which one am I forgetting?
Halfway.
Sorry, Halfway. I love you.
Yep. That's interesting. Yeah, we've got... The consolidation today is a fighting words in most parts of Missouri, but back then it Butler County, they had to, it was not consolidating towns together with schools, it was consolidating one-room schoolhouses in the community together. An interesting thing how back then that was probably viewed as a pretty good thing. Today, you want to get folks in Missouri mad, start talking about consolidating their schools, you know. So tell about the churches in the community. Come back to when and Reverend Slavin started preaching in 1832.
Do you know what religion he was, by chance? I don't know.
Actually, he was a Baptist minister.
Was a Baptist.
Yep.
Of my faith, missionary Baptist, when they did the last cataloging, there were 33 of our faith only. Mm-hmm. And they're very small churches typically. I don't know that very many have active memberships of over 100. But then we also have the Southern Baptist, which I would guess are probably most predominant faith that's in the county simply because they have the largest churches. And we also have SBU here, the Southwest Baptist University.
Yep.
So those are mainly Southern Baptists. We do have a couple. I know there's a Catholic church here and there's a small one in Humansville, but I don't know if the other communities have a Catholic church or not.
I don't think so. I think Stockton would be the next closest one.
Okay.
In Cedar County.
And we have a lot of Methodists. And back in the early 1900s, the Baptists and the Methodists would actually hold revivals together. Their faith and beliefs weren't that different then.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's something you probably wouldn't see today.
No.
The last 10 years has been a lot of non-denominational churches.
Yeah, a lot of non-denominational churches.
And they're very popular.
Yes, very popular.
So, interesting thing, at the first county court was held on February 9th, 1835. And it was the home of Darrell Stockton. And they picked Mr. Irwin Campbell to be the county surveyor. And the first thing they did is tell their county surveyor to go meet with the Greene County surveyor and figure out where the line was. Because they had the longitude and latitude, but like that didn't mean anything to a farmer as to where they are to pay their taxes. So the first thing they did, they sent him out to figure out where the county line was. There were two county judges mentioned, Jeremiah Sloan and Richard Sage, part of the first county judges that put together in Mr. Stockton's home. Then they moved to Mr. Campbell's home for the second day, and I think they had enough government by then, so they just adjourned. The first sheriff was Joseph English, and the clerk was William Henry. The first circuit judge they picked a little later, but he ruled in a log cabin outside Bolivar, and he was C.H. His nickname was Horse Allen. I don't know how you get a nickname like Horse Allen. Nobody's ever thought to call me a horse fun. I'm kind of jealous. So then after setting up those things, I think they decided they had to build the town of Bolivar because they had to build a courthouse and things in and around it. And then they went through and they established a local bar to practice in front of the judge. But really, there's one couple interesting things. There's no record of a conviction of first-degree murder in Polk County through 1900, and I believe that is through Prohibition. There was never a conviction of anybody on first-degree murder. Now, what do you attribute that to?
Well, I guess the cynical side of me says that they didn't prosecute it.
Maybe. Interesting.
Because a lot of times when there are studies of safe cities and unsafe cities, a lot of their evidence is based on the prosecution. So if you have a weak prosecutor, they can skew the safeness or the dangerousness of a community.
Makes sense. That actually makes a lot of sense, to be honest with you.
You'll also notice in your list of officers that they elected at that meeting that they did not elect a collector of revenue because that was the sheriff's duty at that time.
Really? I did not know that.
They collected the taxes, and then eventually a collector was elected.
And is that the way it was all around the state then?
Most places, yes, it was. The sheriff's name, because he was the Shire of the Reef, it was a term that came back from England, and they were the ones who were responsible for the taxes because they could impose penalties much stricter than the current law allows us to do.
I believe you mentioned something we was eating lunch here at Smith's Restaurant, that a law without enforcement is just kind advice.
It's just advice, yeah.
Well, speaking of collecting, we're going to take our first commercial break here on Show in Missouri. We'll be right back. Here at Smith's Restaurant in Polk County, Missouri. Be right back after this.
Here's something worth shouting.
From the hilltops to the rooftops, you're a member of an electric cooperative.
That means you have a say.
A voice in how your co-op is run.
In what's best for the community.
Power to the people.
For the people.
From the people.
Doesn't that sound good?
Learn more about the power of your co-op membership
at togetherwesave.com.
We are Missouri's electric cooperatives. Learn more at membersfirst.coop today.
Welcome back to Show Me Missouri. We're very fortunate to be joined here in Polk County, Missouri, the county of our sitting governor, with the collector of revenue of Polk County, Debbie McGinnis. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Mr. Drake, president of Polk County Farm Bureau. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the first county bar of Polk County. You had a pretty esteemed group of folks that registered to practice in front of Judge Horse Allen. Waldo Johnson, he was a senator, U.S. senator at the time of the Civil War. John Phelps was maybe the most prominent person to practice there. He was a congressman. He was governor of Missouri. He was also the military governor of Arkansas after the war. And there's a lot of connections between, like a lot of southern Missouri especially, between the county and the Civil War. Really a defining time. J.J. Gravette, I put that in West Butler County slang. He was a colonel in the Civil War. He actually served as lieutenant governor, similar to our current governor. The first time they built the courthouse here in 1841 and in a jail near it. But by 1880, it was time to build a new jail. And it sort of fits into a theme of a lot of things in Polk County. Polk Countyans don't favor debt, it doesn't look like. They built an entire jail completely debt-free as they went along. Now, they asked the folks for a bond for the jail, and they said no, and so the county figured out a way to build it on their own. Has that been a recurring theme you've seen in Polk County during your lives?
I believe so. They also defeated the first two bond issues for building the current courthouse. And then finally, on the third try, they got it passed so that they could build that courthouse, which our courthouse that we have standing today in the middle of the square cost $125,000.
Now, when did they build that courthouse?
Yeah, they started in 1904 and finished in 1906.
And it took three tries to get them to pass it?
To get it to pass it, yes. And it's still standing. It's served us very well.
I think that's a lot of Missourians. I think Missourians might be a little, to be a Midwestern industrialized state, we might be a little slower to debt than Illinois or Iowa or some other place. I don't know if that served us well or not, but I think maybe that more Baptist, where nobody shoots anybody for the first 100 years, that might trend to not be as big of fans of debt. And let's talk about the thing that there was a couple things before we talk about the Civil War. Let's talk about the railroads. We're talking about debt. A lot of counties and cities had to put up bonds to build a railroad to their town. Well, Bolivar and Polk County were having none of that at all. In 1869, they put out a $250,000 bond from the commissioners to start building a railroad with to build the Laclede and Fort Scott Railroad Company. So they were going to go from Lebanon down to Fort Scott, and the part that was going to come through Polk County was going to cost $250,000. Well, the citizens, 3 years later, when they put it on the ballot, they decided they were not going to do this. So they had this property that was purchased by this railroad company from bonds from the county, but they didn't have any railroad track on it. They just had the corridor and some of it levied. Over the next 30 years, they spent seven times they went to the voters to try to get bonds, and seven times the voters of Polk County said they would have none of the debt to extend a railroad. And I guess kind of like that jail, over time they figured out a way to make sure it happened, and they built the spur privately without any government debt. That connected a spur through the St. Louis and San Francisco Railroad companies that connected it to Buffalo, part of the Frisco rail system that went on today. But it was done 15 years later with absolutely no debt. I think Southwest Missouri is a part of the state as a whole that's known to not be that. I think they expect their budgets balanced, and I'm not sure debt is part of their ethos. It just seems like that goes through a lot of the communities around here. You know,
I would agree with that.
I think that folks find when they're going to put something on the ballot in November statewide, they don't figure they're going to get a lot of support from a place like Polk County. I think there's a highway measure this November. It would surprise me if it passed in Polk County, right?
Well, yeah. And you got to, if you're going to do that, you got to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And you better not have any too many bells and whistles that people don't think you need, or they just won't vote for it.
Talk about the first Polk County Fair set up in 1859. County fair still happen to this day?
Yes. Yep.
What time of the year is the fair in?
June.
They had it 1 year. Then Thomas Higginbotham came back in 1871 and started it. And I guess it's went on every year since. There was a Polk County being close to Kansas as we get into the Civil War. And I mean, no matter what county we go to, if you're south of 70 for sure, but if you're even, it kind of starts about Boonville east, and then Boonville certainly south. You have some tie into the Civil War, and it seems like in Kansas City it might not have cut such hard feelings, but St. Louis, Southeast Missouri, and Polk County in Southwest Missouri, they all have stories that are very tied into the Civil War. Very divided community. In 1856, Polk County got together as a community in Bolivar and expressed sympathy for the Kansas people who were being invaded by abolitionists. There was definitely seemed like a states' rights feeling in Polk County that they didn't appreciate Kansas being invaded by all these folks that were trying to impose their will on them. And it looked like from there, the Civil War really divided Polk County. There were two different groups of Union forces that came out of Polk County. The 15th Regiment of the U.S. Reserve Corps was actually stationed in Bolivar under the command of General Lyon. And the 8th Cavalry, a lot of folks from here, because there's always been a lot of horses, I guess, in Polk County, a lot of livestock, a lot of the 8th Cavalry was made up of folks from Polk County. They found if you were from Polk County, you probably knew how to ride a horse, and they'd move you over to the cavalry unit. And the Confederacy, Major Gibbons out of Arkansas, took several members, and there was a pretty good fight. It looks like Polk County never voted to succeed, but the state asked for reserves to defend Missouri, and the federal government demanded reserves to defend the country. And they both had about the same number of folks sign up for each. Now, pretty soon after that, the Union disbanded state government, put under Union control, so they didn't do that. But there is a story. Always when we talk about the history of Missouri, there's these stories that kind of symbolize maybe the feeling at the time and the folks. And there's a guy that went and sold some slaves and he sold some livestock down to Arkansas. Because Northwest Arkansas had where a lot of Confederate reserves would come and rest and train. So he sold some livestock and he sold some slaves down in Northwest Arkansas. When he was coming back, he was met at the county line before he could get back to Polk County from Greene County. The guy had a lot of money on him because it's a pretty big sale and the military would pay pretty decent money for that. And these two guys shot him. Other side of the line, no murders in Polk County. But it was two young brothers who had lost their older brother. These kids were not even 12 years old. Took the money and gave it to another family who'd served with their brother, and he had died. The father had died. And that is an interesting thing about how divided you'd find Polk County is back in that time. What, is there any other Civil War stories that come back or legends that come out of Bolivar?
Well, we had three skirmishes, I think, here. Mm-hmm. There was one in February of 62, when the Union came through looking for rebel soldiers. And then we also had one that was called the Affair at Bolivar. It actually has a name, so you can research that one. Then there was a small group of problems in Humansville that happened in March of 62. And then in August of 64, the Union attacked here, and the Confederate Captain Pace was killed in Polk County.
Interesting. I mean, how far would you say are we from the Arkansas line?
100 miles?
Yeah, I would say 80 to 100.
So were those folks stationed in Springfield, or did they just come up out of Arkansas?
I honestly have no idea.
It's an interesting thing. Like we do when we go to Ripley County, they saw Confederate forces that were in Arkansas just started making their march. But some parts of Missouri, they actually had Confederate state. That's where they were garrisoned to move north. Going back in 1861, that's when the Bolivar city limits got established by the legislature. As time went through, John Ross was the first mayor. And then Bolivar, the media industry is an interesting thing, not just because I'm in it, but when you look back at Bolivar, there's a ton of newspapers. Bolivar one time had 5 newspapers publishing at once. The first one was the Weekly Courier in 1866, but the Bolivar Free Press started in 1868. Tell us about the Bolivar Free Press today.
Well, it's 150 years old. They just celebrated this summer and had a very nice celebration. It's my understanding that a lot of the newspapers from that time when we had multiple ones were very politically motivated. And so you had a Democrat paper, mm-hmm. you had a Republican paper, and I don't know what the other three were, but they came together and then formed the Bolivar Herald Free Press.
So, it's interesting how those things document history. In 1878, you had the college. Tell us about the college here in Polk County.
Okay. Well, first it started in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. It was in Lebanon for 1 year. And then they, for whatever reason, decided that maybe they couldn't hold it all together. I think they had 60 students and 6 faculty at that time. So they applied for a state charter for someone else to take it. And Bolivar got that charter. So it started here in 1879. It's still in existence. It has about 3,500 students enrolled now. Yeah. And most of those are here at Bolivar because there are all other campuses. It started as just a junior college, and it was SWBC, and then it changed and became SBU, which it's still hard for all of us to think about how that transition was made, because you just get so caught up in how you're used to it. But it became SBU in 1981. Since then, they've added a physical therapy, which is one of their number one fields of study that they offer, as well as a nursing program where they partnered with St. John's, which would now be Mercy, out of Springfield again. Hard to remember those things. They've had presidents that we would know now, like Roy Blunt. He was the president there from 93 to 96, also a graduate from that school.
I didn't know that.
And now we have C. Pat Taylor, but I think he's just now entering retirement. Yeah. And then as far as famous graduates from the school that people might know, Roy Blunt, obviously, and then Shane Scholler, who's the Greene County clerk. He's also a graduate from there. So I think that that's nice. Today, the average class size is 24, and the student ratio is 12 to 1. So it still is a smaller class size compared to a lot of universities. And I think it's a great place for people who maybe are a little less outgoing and maybe not ready to head out into the big city school, because they can come here, and because it's religious-based, they're not going to lose that feeling of faith here, as well as the classroom size is smaller, so they're more likely to succeed.
Do most students live on campus for a couple years?
It's a requirement unless you get an exemption, and there's also a required chapel attendance. So,
yeah.
I think you have to go 3 days a week. I can't exactly remember. I went there part-time, because I was dually enrolled, but I was exempt because I was married and I did not live on campus. So I never really actually went to chapel.
Well, I went to SEMO. I didn't get to chapel much either. So let's talk about when we talk about the history of Polk County. Maybe I'll ask you guys for some famous Polk Countyans, but Zoe Atkins won the 1886 Pulitzer Prize for her novel, The Old Maid. Obviously, I think folks will now talk about the governor of the state of Missouri being from Polk County, Mike Parson. Am I missing anybody?
Oh, yeah.
If anybody
ever watched Petticoat Junction, Uncle Joe is from Humansville.
Didn't know that.
Yes. And I believe that Zoe Atkins was also from Humansville.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so who would think? I'm from Humansville. I was born there. They didn't like me that much. They made me go home after 3 days.
Who else am I missing?
I thought you knew somebody else that was from Polk County.
Was it Adam Ricchetti?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that was something that happened here. He wasn't from here.
His brother lived here.
Is that why they were
here?
That's
why they were here.
Okay, well, tell that story then.
And they kidnapped the sheriff. Pretty Boy Floyd and Adam Ricchetti kidnapped the sheriff. His brother worked at a...
That's a bold move.
Yeah, well, his brother worked at an auto shop, which would be just west of the square down there, right next to Bill Roberts. And they were coming through, and they were heading to Kansas City. And this is right before the Kansas City Massacre.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's right.
I'm pretty sure.
Before our time.
They stopped in because his brother worked there and lived in Bolivar, and to get the car worked on. And just so happened that the sheriff of Polk County walked in, just like he always does, just walked in for a daily visit, and he recognized him, and they took him hostage and drove him all the way up to Kansas City. Or they didn't make it all the way to Kansas City before they dropped him off.
Just on the side of the road?
Yeah.
Well, and I think part of the reason why they decided to take him rather than to shoot him was because he was more familiar with the back roads. So they thought that maybe he could help them get towards Kansas City without having to take the major highways, which they knew that people would be looking for them.
Yeah. And one of somebody that has talked to Jack Killingsworth
was the sheriff.
Was the sheriff. One of them, and I can't remember which one, wanted to shoot him. I want to say it was Adam Ricchetti wanted to shoot, and Pretty Boy Floyd kept talking him out of it.
Well, that's a heck of a car ride.
Yeah, in fact, he's buried out in...
Adam Ricchetti is buried here in Polk County.
Yeah. No kidding.
And we have the Tommy gun. The County of Polk, the Sheriff's Office, owns that gun.
They bought a Tommy gun after this happened because they felt like, you know, they needed one. Because they, you know, that was back when...
Well, that's an interesting story to tell about. There were two sheriffs of Polk County at different times. One was kidnapped by Pretty Boy Floyd. The other became governor of Missouri.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll talk country singer Wynn Stewart, tip of the hat to Rachel for that, is a Polk County native. Let's talk for a minute here before we take a break. Back during the time, what did folks do for fun in Polk County?
Well, what period of time are we talking about?
Let's go back. we'll start with today, but let me go back to the beginning. There's a cave here called Leith's Cave.
Never
in
been
Jackson,
there.
Largest cave that's been explored here. They actually, in the notes, they mentioned back in the day that horse rustlers or train robbers would hide out there. Yeah. Pity Boy Floyd should have known about that. He might have.
Yeah.
Might have spent him a night's rest. When folks are gonna have a good time in Bolivar today, what do they do?
Well, the lakes. A lot of, you know, on the weekend, a lot of families go to the lakes. We got Stockton Lake.
Palme de Terre.
And Palme de Terre. A lot of people go to Palme de Terre for recreation, you know, skiing and tubing and all that. There's several people that used to live in town now live on the lake. They build them a lake house up there, and they live full-time up there. So that's one of the things. A lot of people go to Springfield on the weekends. It's only 25
sure.
minutes.
And Branson, I guess, I'd put it at about 50 minutes or so?
60, yeah.
60, yeah.
Bolivar City does not have liquor, or at least not easy to find. So if you're wanting to have alcohol, you almost have to go to Springfield to get much variety.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What do we have? Polk County or?
Well, once you get outside Bolivar, because Cut-Ups
and does...
Do they have liquor here?
Yeah, they serve beer here.
Beer here.
And Kathy's Pasta.
Kathy's Pasta. I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There for a long time, there was one bar in town, and there was just one liquor store. Now, all the gas stations sell it now.
Yeah. So there's a reason they put SBU here, right?
Maybe they
took home. I was going to say the other way around.
So these folks are Chiefs fans, right?
Yes.
There's a few Royals, but I say Chiefs. Probably are domain.
Yeah, there's a few, several Cowboy fans in
really?
This area, yeah.
I assume they're all Cardinal fans here, right?
Yes, there are. There's a lot of Cardinals fans.
Yes.
And a lot of Royals fans, and there's people like me that are both.
There's a lot?
So.
Usually Royals fans almost make it across the interstate to that beautiful skyline at Kauffman Stadium of that Denny's and a Drury Inn. I figure half the staff at that Denny's is Royals fans, right? And I've seen some Royals fans as far east as Odessa before. Not many, but, you know, disseminated thing. But I always thought, so back when Mike Parson was a rep, somebody mentioned him running for statewide office back then. And I remember the next conversation about sports, and he goes, "Well, I'm a Cardinals fan and a Chiefs fan." Back when they still had the Rams, he knew how to split that right down the middle, be a little bit of both, because no one in St. Louis would get too bent out of shape if you're a Chiefs fan. And Kansas City people have a different cloth. But well, we're going to take a break here while Rachel's rolling her eyes at us. We'll be right back with Show Missouri here in Polk County.
Head by your County Farm Bureau office today to pick up Super Saver coupons for discounts at the Missouri State Fair, August 9th through 19th in Sedalia. Visit the Missouri Farm Bureau building to get ice-cold 25-cent milk and find out how Farm Bureau advocates for farmers, the rural way of life, and all Missourians. Take the straw poll for the U.S. Senate race and enter to win a brand new John Deere riding lawnmower. So get your coupons at your County Farm Bureau office while they last.
Welcome back to Show Me Missouri. Proud to be here giving you a little look inside Polk County, the county, home county of the new governor. I want to thank our sponsors, CFM Insurance, the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, Missouri Association of Counties, and obviously always our friends at Farm Bureau. Very grateful for them. Joined here by Mr. Drake. Good to have you, sir.
Thank you.
And Ms. McGinnis, the county collector here. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Kyle, let's talk about talk a little about modern day Polk County. The first census they took had 8,000 people in it back in 1840. The growth was pretty significant, kind of going along with most of Missouri through 1900, and then coming out of 1900, it didn't grow much until right around the 80s. Kind of all southwest Missouri seems like it started growing in the 80s and 90s, seeing 25% growth in the 90s. And now it sits at 31,000. The population is still growing, and where's it growing at?
Well, Pleasant Hope's seeing a lot of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's because of the proximity to Springfield. So people can actually live there, and they have good schools, and then driving to Springfield each day to work. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of growth in Bolivar. We're still growing. And that's a blessing to the county, because we benefit, all of us, if we're all employed and we're all working. It helps just improve our quality of life here.
What's the major employers here in Polk County?
CMH,
the hospital, mm-hmm. Citizens Memorial Hospital. And then you have Accenture or Duck Creek. Yeah, which they write software programs for insurance companies,
mm-hmm.
very technical. And then we've just reopened our Tracker Marine shop. And so they've recently just employed 130 people. So those are jobs that we were definitely glad to have back in the community. And SBU is a large employer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the high school.
Oh, well, the high school, too. I mean, our school system, Bolivar school system, employs a lot of people.
Let's tell a story about the high school. So you had in, it was 48, they unveiled the statue.
Correct.
Of, and how you say his name again?
Simón Bolívar.
It just sounds a lot better when you say it. So they had over 50,000 people in town that day.
Right.
And how many folks are in town normally?
Well, there's 3,500 that actually lived at Bolivar,
yeah.
So they wouldn't all be in town one day, but there was that many that day.
And one of the biggest days ever, so a couple of years later, they decided they was going to put up to a vote changing the name of the Bolivar High School's mascot. Was it Tigers, you said?
We were the Tigers, along with several other ones.
That.
Well, they actually allowed the high school students themselves to vote. So in 1951, they asked them to vote, and the vote was 3-1 to change it to the Liberator. And we're the only Liberator that I'm aware of in the United States. And ironically, the underclassmen, the freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, were predominantly for changing it. And the senior class was almost unanimously against changing it. They wanted to stay. They wanted to graduate the Tigers.
But they ended up graduating the Liberators,
yes.
Right? That is a cool name. I saw the, I guess it was at the sign of the school or something. There was the image of Bolivar or Bolivar. Out liberating somewhere in the Americas. That's a neat story. That's a neat tie. Now, I've heard you had some folks from the Americas come back, right?
Yes, they came back, I'm guessing, in the late 80s or early 90s, mm-hmm. just because they wanted to see the community. And it was right around, I believe, Country Days, which was one of our community festivals. And we had special events at the park just so they could see it again. And they were just so happy that they were commemorating and honoring their ancestry.
Yeah.
Was it the 50 year anniversary of it or something like that?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
That would have been in 08 then. Yeah. Or 98. Would have been in 98. Yeah. That sounds better.
That is an outstanding thing. If you all ever come through town, yeah, go down by the Courthouse Square, not very far down, is the statue right there on the highway. It's worth, when you come to Bolivar, it's definitely worth coming. It would be, as for my dad, my dad ended up getting a hold of Facebook a little later in life, and now that he has, he don't let go of it. So if you have a dad like I do that loves his Facebook page, you can definitely go add to your Facebook page with a picture of the statue of Simón Bolívar. And I would say hit the rewind button on the podcast a little bit to hear Ms. McGinnis say it, because it sounds outstanding. Let's talk a little politics. Polk County's the most Republican of Republican, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
All the county officials are Republicans.
Yes.
70-30 for Republicans outside statewide Congress, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
What makes Polk County? Is it because a county that don't like debt becomes Republican?
I don't know. I think there might be a fair correlation between those two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just our lifestyles.
Yep.
No debt. Fairly faith-based, or at least it was in the beginning. Families that aren't terribly as mobile as some, like mine. Having been here, I've been here for 7 generations. My grandchildren are still here. My brothers and sisters also live here. We had one aunt that moved to Rolla, but felt like she moved to Russia because she was so far away, because the rest of us could literally throw together a get-together in less than an hour. Children and myself, we all live within half a mile of the same highway that runs through town. We're together a lot, and I think that kind of contributes, that if the family doesn't disassemble, then their beliefs kind of stay intact too. They all kind of believe the same way, and we just call ourselves Republicans.
Well, but a lot of Southwest Missouri is that way, right?
Yes.
We like our independence. You know, we like making our own decisions and don't like interference, and a lot of it is the faith-based, as Debbie said.
But being Republicans goes back a long way. I mean, outside of just huge election years for Democrats, like in 64 when Barry Goldwater got beat, or back when FDR was elected the first time, every other time, going back through most of the century, the Polk County's always been solidly Republican.
Yeah, and the Democrats who are in the county are mostly conservative. I would call them mostly conservative.
Yeah, they're very conservative for the most
Democrats
part.
Democrats.
Yeah. And this is an unzoned. He talked about our independence. Our county's not zoned. We have no zoning here other than what's required by law to do your sewer systems.
Yeah.
And it's been brought up that we need to have some long-range plans and we need to have zoning to protect us, but most of us see it as the way that we're giving up something, and we don't want to give it up.
Well, you could just move to the People's Republic of Greene County if you want.
Well, sometimes we do get some other people who move here for that very reason, is the freedom that they have here. And it can create some issues with some housing, what I would call almost substandard housing, because we don't require anything like that out in the county. But for all of us who don't have it as our next-door neighbor, that's a small price to pay to be able to say we can do what we want.
You know, you're in good Missouri territory when they think Greene County's too liberal. You know, it's always good to be here. So the people that represent the county now, obviously Billy Long in Congress. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your state representative.
Mike Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's from here, obviously.
He is?
Used to be, well, I guess he still is, a pharmacist.
Yes.
His family has had a photography studio. They bought it from those two sisters. What were their names? Drake. I think they were the Drake sisters. He bought that photography studio from when the kids were relatively young.
Not related to me.
And they've stayed here, so he's got roots here. I think most of his children are still here. And I think he's doing a good job. It's never easy when you're new to something that is totally what you're not accustomed to doing. And I think he's adapting very well.
Somebody that observes it, he has taken to it well. I think being a professional and understanding government a little bit has done him well. I also thought it was interesting. I've seen him go to the cities and kind of get a different perspective. And even if it doesn't change his perspective, you can tell that when you're willing to go up to St. Louis, Kansas City and actually learn about somebody else's district, they're a lot more willing to help you with something for your district. It was an interesting thing. I watched him go do that. I thought that was pretty impressive.
He back in the late winter, early spring, one of his guys gotten to know, representatives gotten to know from St. Louis.
Yep.
He went and spent a day in his district, and then he returned the favor and came down and spent the day in Polk County. And,
I know what you're talking. It was Representative Bruce Franks from St. Louis. He did This Week in Missouri Politics with us when he came up. It was an interesting thing to watch the two of them. I can't imagine they have hardly anything on God's green globe in common, except they had a mutual interest in the state in different parts of it. And it was interesting to watch the respect Representative Franks afforded him and how he reciprocated that. I was pretty impressed by that you're willing to go walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. I think it makes you more confident about why you do yours, and a little just an all-around. It was interesting to watch the two of them interact, and it's probably what makes Missouri a great place is you can see other folks and respect their point of view, even if you don't have to agree with it, you know. So tell me something else about tell me something about Polk County. Reason why folks should come here. Is it the lakes? Why should you visit Polk County?
Well, if you're visiting for vacation, yeah, the lakes, definitely.
Yep. You see the college. Well, you can also, I guess, see the governor, Bell Hay, in Polk County.
Yeah, Bell Hay.
From the road, yeah. I guess. No?
We have one of the nicest parks of any small community, I think. Dunnigan Park. It's secluded in that when you enter through the brick columns, you're going to go a mile, and you're not going to see anything else except the park, because the road is a mile. It takes you around a pond. We have ducks, we have geese, and we have swans. We have all kinds of equipment that the children can play on. And they've also recently just added a walking trail so that you're not walking on the place where the cars are. You have a more secure place, a pedestrian path that'll go all the way and bring you back to both gates. And it's just a beautiful place to relax. And I know that when I was a teenager, and we would make our little trek through the square and make the circles, my mom used to say that we thought the park was on the way to everywhere we needed to go. And the park's really not on your way to anywhere you need to go unless you're going to the hospital, which wasn't there then. So it was really out of the way, but it was worth it. It's just what you did because it's just so pretty. We have a beautiful park.
Well, Ms. Debbie McGinnis, I want to thank you, the county collector of Polk County. Thank you for joining us on Show Me Missouri. Trent Dre, the president of the Polk County Farm Bureau, thank you for joining us. I want to thank Rachel. Appreciate her putting the show together. I always want to thank our sponsors, CFM Insurance, the Missouri Association of Counties, Missouri Association Electric Cooperatives, and as always, Farm Bureau for joining us on Show Me Missouri. We're going to bid you goodbye from Smith's Restaurant here in Baller, Missouri in Polk County. Hope you enjoyed this look into the state of Missouri and our history. I think next week we'll be in Randolph County giving you a little view into Show Me Missouri.